Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
Welcome to KCBS In Depth. I'm KCBS's Matt Bigler, and today we have a special program. We are coming to you from the San Francisco Zoo. We are surrounded by thousands of animals at this very moment. Do you know how many animals are at the San Francisco Zoo? I'm going to give a pop quiz to the audience. They provided me with a wireless microphone. So I'm going to run down to the audience real quick. How many animals do you think are at the zoo? Okay, hundreds?
Hundreds, yeah, I don't know.
Okay, give me a number. How many do you think are at the zoo?
2,000.
2,000. Anybody else want to throw it? How many do you think? You work at the zoo. How many animals are at the zoo?
That seems like a good guess.
2,000?
Yeah, maybe more. Maybe more if you count little critters and stuff.
Anybody else want to? Okay, yeah. Don Bastida, how many?
5,000.
5,000. Anybody else want to hazard a guess?
3,500.
3,500. Okay. The answer is, I'm running back to the stage. Let me check my notes. 7,629 animals. Don Bastida gets it. That's a lot of critters. And it even, the zoo has it broken down. Mammals, 151. Birds, 233. Reptiles, 90. Amphibians, 4,167. And invertebrates, 2,988. But I'm not an expert in animals. We are joined by an expert in animals. We're speaking with Patrick Schlimmer. He is director of the Global Conservation Program here at the San Francisco Zoo. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, we are on your turf, so thank you for allowing us to be here. And we're coming to you on Earth Day, and I know we're going to talk more about that later on, because this is a special day, and there are some special events planned here at the zoo. But tell us a little bit about what you do here at the zoo.
So I pretty much grew up at the zoo. I started volunteering when I was a teenager, and that was back in the 80s. So I've actually worn quite a few hats here at the zoo over the years. And in fact, as to your estimate of the population, it's actually a bit of an understatement.
Oh.
If you look at our invertebrate collection. And for many years, I was the keeper and then the curator of our insect zoo. And I can tell you that even just our beehive has about 50,000 animals.
Okay.
If we're counting heads. So, yeah, lots and lots and lots of different animals in the insect zoo.
So take that 7,000 and add about 50,000 to it.
Yeah,
okay.
Depending on the season.
So Let's go down to small numbers now. Mm. Some animals here at the zoo are endangered or even critically endangered. I understand there's about a dozen or so that are especially threatened.
Yeah, we're actually home to 17 critically endangered species. Many people are familiar with endangered species, but there's actually different levels of that according to the IUCN. And critically endangered is pretty much the class right before you're extinct in the wild. Mm. There's various ways of measuring it, but one of them is that essentially if nothing is done within the next 10 years or so, there's a very good chance, better than even chance, that the animals are simply going to disappear from
wow.
the wild.
Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, so there's quite a few parrots from South America, some of the macaws. We've got a giant tortoise from the Galapagos. We have our axolotls that we just got in from Mexico this year. Bali mynas, beautiful birds from Indonesia. There's estimated to be less than 50 individuals of those left in the wild. Mm. And then, of course, some of our larger animals, like the orangutans from Borneo. Lots of tortoises, especially from Madagascar, are critically endangered at this point. And then even close to home here, we have our Mojave Desert tortoise, which you can find down in the Mojave and throughout the Southwest. That is also a critically endangered species. And in fact, our Mojave Desert tortoise, who lives in the Ark, is the oldest animal at the zoo. His name is Mojave, and I believe he's 77 this year.
And that's the oldest animal at the zoo?
Yeah, that's the oldest animal at the zoo, and he's not even considered very old for a desert tortoise. He can live to be well over 100.
Talk about the axolotls, because they have a fascinating story about how they ended up at the San Francisco Zoo. They're native to Mexico, right?
Yeah, they are. Axolotls are a funny species because they're used as lab animals throughout the world. So in captivity, their populations are actually okay, but in the wild where they're found, which is near Mexico City, there's very few left. They're starting to disappear in the wild altogether. So these are a species that were actually intercepted by Fish and Wildlife, and they ended up here.
And it's a type of salamander.
Yeah, they're very unusual critters. The adults stay in their immature form. So if they look like kind of baby animals, it's because they are, which makes them very, very cute. But yeah, very interesting from an evolutionary perspective. And they are on display. If you go to our California Conservation Corridor, you can see these guys. They're really, really cute to look at.
They almost look like they are a salamander with a crown.
Yeah, yeah.
Feathery.
They've got that frill around
their
head.
Yeah, a frill. That's exactly what it is.
They're adorable.
So the question is, how does taking care of these endangered animals, these critically endangered animals, here at the zoo help their populations in the wild?
Well, we have many, many projects going on. It really takes a village, and we have a village here at the zoo of conservationists and nutritionists and our fabulously dedicated keepers and curators. But we work on a lot of projects supporting global conservation, but we also do quite a few projects that are right here in the Bay Area. And in fact, if I can, I actually just heard from our director of field conservation this morning, Dr. Stiles, and if I could just read this real quick.
Sure.
She said, we are current... So these are some of the projects.
Hold on. I'm not sure. We have an intrusion of sound. What are we hearing right now?
Those are some of our lemurs.
Ah.
And they do that a couple times a day.
Okay.
That's pretty exciting to watch.
So if we hear that again, it'll be the lemurs who want to get in on the show.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. Please continue.
So this is a quote I got just this morning. She said, because I asked her about which program she was working on. She said, we are currently head starting 5 federally threatened or endangered frog species. So these are the California red-legged frogs, the Sierra Nevada yellow-legged frogs, mountain yellow-legged frogs, foothill yellow-legged frogs, and Yosemite toads, as well as western pond turtles and San Francisco garter snakes. We just hit our 10-year anniversary, and we've released over 7,000 sub-adult frogs and toads, and over 450 turtles in the past decade. We're still partnering with the National Parks and Forests in California, as well as local Bay Area parks, reserves, and conservation banks.
And are all of those native California species also on display, or do they live at the zoo?
So some of them are on display, but many of them are kind of behind the scenes. We have a lot of projects that go on that you wouldn't necessarily be aware of just as a casual visitor. But when you come out to the zoo, when you get a membership or you pay your admission ticket, you're also supporting all of this conservation effort that goes on behind the scenes. We are a conservation organization, and that is the main purpose for our existence here.
And I just want to unpack that a little bit more, because not only is the zoo making sure that these animals survive, they're also being reintroduced into their native habitats in California?
Yeah, absolutely. We've reintroduced, for instance, the Yosemite toad. Hasn't been seen in Yosemite for over 50 years, but we're starting to get him back out there.
And one of those on the list is kind of a celebrity. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the red-legged... What is the name? It is the... I have it here. No, not the San Francisco fork-tailed damselfly, the California red-legged frog, which was in a famous piece of literature.
That's true, yeah. That is the same species that Mr. Mark Twain wrote about in the Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. They are an endangered species locally here. This is throughout this region is the only place where you can find them. They're very attractive frogs, and those are also actually a species that you can see in our California Conservation Corridor. They also happen to be the favorite food item of the San Francisco garter snake, another endemic species that we are working on preserving. The San Francisco garter snake has been called the most beautiful serpent in North America. It's a very pretty little multicolored garter snake that, again, is only found here in the Bay Area.
Why is it that these species, some of which are famous, are going extinct? I know there's lots of reasons, but what are some of the factors that are at play?
Well, there's habitat destruction. Of course, there's just as development encroaches more and more, there's less and less land for these wild animals. There's water pollution. Of course, we're still to this day feeling the effects of all of the gold rush, of them blasting so much tons of sediment and then using mercury to try to extract gold. So San Francisco Bay is still gradually recovering from that, but it's a very long process. And then, of course, the big bugaboo these days is climate change, because that really affects everything else.
Well, I think that's a good segue to talk about Earth Day. Mm. This is a day when we celebrate Earth and conservation. What is it that people can do at home to enhance the ability of the Earth to be more sustainable?
That's a great question, and it's what Earth Day is all about. So there's a few things. I was thinking about this. There's a few things that are fairly simple that you can do. If you've got a little bit of a yard at your house, your home, you can plant native plants. If you've got a lawn, get rid of that lawn. The lawn's not doing anything for the local environment. But if you can plant native plants, you're going to benefit bees, butterflies, birds, and all sorts of other native animals. You'll also end up using a lot less chemicals and a lot less water. If you visit our Greenies Conservation Corner, you can get some ideas for things that you can do in your yard. Another thing you can do is to use products that are made with sustainable palm oil. So palm oil is, as you may be aware, is in just about everything these days. It's in literally thousands of products. And the problem with that is that they're clear-cutting forests, especially in Malaysia and Indonesia, to plant these palm oil plantations. And that's, of course, threatening the local wildlife, Sumatran tigers and orangutans. But there are ways to grow palm oil sustainably that does not affect the local environment. And so how do you know? Well, you can go on the website of the Roundtable for Sustainable Palm Oil, and they'll actually give you a list of all the products that are safe to use and the ones that you might want to avoid.
So it sounds like it's more complicated than just looking at the label, because it won't say sustainable palm oil. It'll just say palm oil.
No, actually, I think they do have the RSPO, the Roundtable for Sustainable Palm Oil, does actually have a label now on many products. And they do also have a there's some sort of an app. I haven't used it yet myself, but you can use it to scan the product even in the aisle. And then you can figure it out that way.
Well, that is something that I will definitely be looking for the next time I look at ingredients, because palm oil is in a lot of stuff, a lot of the foods that we eat on a regular basis.
Yeah, the foods that we eat, the soaps and shampoos, the cosmetics, just about everything you can imagine, it seems like.
How about here at the zoo? How is the zoo being more sustainable? And I know that comes down to even the forks and spoons that are being used in the snack bar.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely try to walk the talk, and we have a very good team that makes sure that we are as sustainable as we can possibly be, and that we recycle almost everything that you see. When you come out to the zoo, you'll see that there's recycling bins next to every garbage can, and we have a team that actually goes through and makes sure that most of that does get recycled and doesn't end up in landfills. And then if you go to our food stands, our cafes, our restaurants, we also promote sustainable food sources like the various fish that are considered good to eat on the Monterey Bay Aquarium list. There's certain things that you definitely want to avoid because they're not sustainably harvested, but there are others that are perfectly fine to eat. I'll give a plug for Monterey Bay Aquarium as well, and that's another list that you can look up online and can really inform your buying decisions when it comes to seafood.
Yes, the Monterey Bay Aquarium. I believe it's called the Seafood Watch List.
Absolutely,
and
you're right.
They color code different seafoods, not just fish, but red, yellow, and green, I believe are the right colors.
That's correct, yep. So green is good. Stick with the green. Try to avoid the yellows, and by all costs, you want to avoid those reds.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you about a couple other things that are in the news when it comes to the zoo. Mm. And one I noticed just as I was driving in, the Great Highway is no longer a highway, at least in portions of it. The transformation has happened. It is now a park.
Yeah.
I believe the Sunset Dunes.
Sunset Dunes.
Which is a great name, by the way.
Yeah.
And I just saw as I turned right into the zoo, there are these giant animal structures, sculptures, and they're not really giant. They are life-size giraffes. It is a scale model of a giraffe. So the question is, how has that transformation of that entrance to the zoo, at least on one half, changed how visitors are coming to the zoo?
Yeah, it's an interesting and sort of an ongoing issue right now, because as you may be aware of, there's a lot going on right in our backyard here, where the coast is encroaching. So we're kind of having to rework some of the roads around here. I think the Sunset Dunes has a lot of potential for I think they're going to be good partners for us in the long run. I think especially if we can start putting some of our conservation messages out there along the road. If you're a bike rider, it's now a wonderful way to get to the zoo. You've got 2 miles of flat roadway with beautiful ocean views. You can just shoot right on down here. We always, of course, encourage everyone to ride their bikes or to take mass transit when they come to the zoo. I think it's exciting. I think we're going to be able to do a lot of stuff with the new park out here in our backyard.
Hmm. And maybe give zoo visitors something else to do once done at the zoo. There's a great park they can check out.
Exactly, yeah. You know, historically, this whole side of the city was a recreation zone. Mm-hmm. Back when Flyshacker Pool was out here and the Sutro Baths and Playland at the Beach. So this was kind of a destination, and I think maybe we're kind of getting back to that a little bit.
It's almost like Playland at the Beach's return, just without the amusement rides.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a little bit, I think.
The other big change that will be coming to the zoo, or at least high-profile change, is giant pandas are scheduled to arrive, I believe, later this year. Can you give us a panda update? Because I know a lot of our listeners will be looking forward to seeing giant pandas.
Yeah, as are we all. It's very exciting. It's probably the most exciting thing that's happened at the zoo in my 40 or so years here. We're looking forward to it. The plan right now is to have those guys on display by a year from now, next April 2026.
Do you know approximately when they will actually arrive at the zoo before they are on display? That's not quite the right term. What's the right term to use when they're visible to the public?
On exhibit.
On exhibit,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll probably get them sometime in the fall, and then they'll have a period of acclimation, and like all animals at the zoo, they also go through a quarantine period. We'll get them used to living out here in on the west end of San Francisco, and then they should be visible to the public by April.
What has to happen to their enclosure to make sure that they feel comfortable, able to be viewed by the public without too much stress? Because I know that pandas are notorious for being a little bit shy.
Yeah, they're fairly sensitive animals. We have lots of examples to work with now. There are 26 zoos, I believe, throughout the world that are currently maintaining pandas in 21 countries, including some of our colleagues down in San Diego. The Chinese biologists themselves have a lot to say about the best ways to set up the environment for these animals. We've been working closely with them. We have twice a month we have Zoom meetings with the Chinese biologists, and we're working out all of those details.
Is it true they only eat bamboo?
Pretty much. It's about 99% of their diet.
Wow.
They're very unusual animals. They are bears, so they're classified as carnivores, but they're vegetarian bears. They eat bamboo, which is a grass. That's another element that we've been working on. There's about 25 different species of bamboo that they will feed on, and they eat quite a bit of it. We'll be offering about 46 kilograms, or about 100 pounds of bamboo per animal each day.
Wow.
We have to, source lots and lots of bamboo for them.
Where do you get the bamboo in those quantities?
We have a few different sources that we're working on. We can grow a fair amount of it here on grounds,
okay.
And we've actually been doing that. We've had some work parties recently where we've just been building up bamboo gardens here and there. But we also have, we're working with some folks to establish some plantations around the Bay Area.
I don't know a lot about bamboo, but I do know it grows very fast.
Yeah, it's the fastest growing land plant, I believe.
Wow.
I think kelp in the ocean grows faster, but other than that, yeah, bamboo grows very, very fast. I think I read somewhere it was can grow up to a foot a day or something like that. It's incredible.
Oh, you could watch that grow.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so when the pandas arrive, they will have a forest that is ready for them to feed them.
Well, they would probably, anything that we planted in the exhibit, they'll probably go through pretty quick. So we'll be offering them food every day. They'll have a huge habitat with everything that they need.
On that note, I'm sure you have heard that there is a little bit of tension with China right now to do with the trade war. Tariffs for imports and exports for both countries are over 100%. And there has been some concern that could derail the panda program, the giant panda program, and San Francisco is one of the zoos where they are expected to arrive. Is there any concern that the trade war could affect the arrival of the giant pandas?
Honestly, it is a concern. This is a changing situation from day to day, maybe from hour to hour, it feels like sometimes. I don't think anybody really knows the answer to that. So we're just going to move forward and hope for the best. I think this is actually a wonderful, maybe even unique opportunity for our two nations to get together. It's something that we both agree on. We want to see the long-term survival of this species. So whatever else is going on between these, between China and the United States, I think this is something that could bring us very closely together.
Yeah, that would be a positive way to look at this. This is something that we can all get behind. It's mutually beneficial. What is the status of giant pandas in the wild?
So they're currently listed as vulnerable. They were listed as an endangered species for many years, but in 2016, their numbers actually came up to the point where they were able to be downlisted by the IUCN. So now they are considered a vulnerable species. There's about over 1,800 in the wild at this time. I think 1,864 was the precise number most recently in the wild, and then there's about 600 in captivity throughout the world.
Well, I would like to end our conversation with the zoo itself. If there's a visitor to the zoo, I see some visitors walking in. Welcome. If you were to talk to these folks, it looks like a dad and maybe his 2 or 3 year old. How old is your child? 3. Okay, we have a 3-year-old in the audience. If you don't mind, come on up, and I may ask you what your favorite animal is. But what would you tell families about where to go? What are some of your favorite exhibits? What's a good way to travel around the zoo?
Oh, wow. There's so many. As I say, I was in charge of the insect zoo for many years, and so that is still very near and dear to my heart. And I believe it is one of our more popular exhibits. Everybody likes to see those bugs. But we have so many wonderful things here. We have the lemur forest, I think is one of our best exhibits. They were able to, when they built that exhibit, they built it around these wonderful, well-established trees. And so the lemurs have these huge trees that they can move around through, and it's very natural for them.
Are those the lemurs that we heard earlier?
The very same, yeah. and then, of course, we have our non-animal attractions. We have our little puffer steam train that's over 100 years old. It's a very fun ride. We've got our beautiful carousel. The carousel actually predates the zoo. The carousel goes back to when Fleischhacker Pool was out here. So that also is about 100 years old. We've got a fantastic playground for the kids. It's, I think, one of the best playgrounds in the city.
Is that the one that I walked by walked to the restroom?
Exactly.
It's great. It looks sort of like an iceberg.
Yeah, there's an iceberg section. There's a sort of a rainforest section. It's really fun. Before we opened it to the public, all of us staff went and played on it for a while.
Product testing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then we've got our sculpture garden as well, where you can see some animals that we aren't able to display necessarily, like sharks and whatnot, but you can see very realistic sculptures of those animals as well.
Well, that is a great overview of the zoo. Can I ask you a quick question about why you're coming to the zoo? Come on down. What's your name?
My name is Mina.
Mina? I'm Matt. Thanks for talking to me. Have you been to the zoo before?
Like, we always come here sometimes.
Yeah? What's your favorite animal at the zoo?
It's like... they kind of like, he likes,
How about the rhino? Do you like the rhino?
I thought I heard that.
Oh, that was a vehicle of some kind. But we did hear the lemurs earlier. Do you like the lemurs?
I like the lemurs.
Yeah, they're noisy.
Yeah.
We're wondering about the beehive. When is the beehive coming back?
We can ask. We have a zoo expert that we can. When is the beehive coming back?
It's coming back actually very soon. If not next week, the following week.
Oh, wow. That's soon. Nice. Nice.
What's your name, Dad?
I'm Dan.
Yeah. Hi, Dan. I'm Matt.
Matt. Nice.
How do you feel about giant pandas?
I like them. Yeah.
Have you heard they're coming back to the zoo?
I have heard that. Yeah. Yeah. That's exciting. Absolutely.
Would you like to see some giant pandas?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, you guys have a great time at the zoo. Let's hear a round of applause for our impromptu guests. as I walk back to the stage. Thank you so much for talking to us and for being part of KCBS In Depth. We've been speaking with Patrick Schlimmer, the director of the Global Conservation Program here at the San Francisco Zoo. Let's have another round of applause for Patrick. And for KCBS In Depth, I'm Matt Bigler.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit KCBSRadio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.